Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
Hey, what's going on, No Bad Dog Army? Welcome back to the No Bad Dogs podcast with me, Tom Davis. This is a great podcast, really different topics for sure as far as training and the routes that we go of understanding the cores of why dogs misbehave and why dogs push boundaries. And this is not a doodle. I'm so used to saying doodle. This is a poodle, 8 month old. And this is an individual that is just, you know, getting taken advantage of. The dog is jumping and nipping and really getting away with a lot of stuff. So as you guys know, in a lot of my podcasts, it's like, hey, these are the external behaviors. These are the things that are happening. And if we really take a look at the relationship, it's pretty clear to see exactly why all these things are happening and how to overcome some of these things as well. So just a really great podcast to walk people through how to get a better behaved dog, as well as we do a little bit of training just because the picture quality was good and the network was good. And so just like we talked through the entire thing of why these things happen. And then at the end, she demonstrated really clearly, hey, I'm going to ask you to do this. I'm like, boom, right there. That's exactly what we're talking about. So we went over this whole, this is why your dog doesn't listen to you. This is why your dog doesn't respect you. This is why your dog is taking advantage of you. And then she's like, oh yeah, that makes sense. And at the end, it was like, and then I was like, let me see how you would handle her. And then I was able to show her exactly what I was talking about. So it was really cool. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast. As always, I'm going to be answering three of your dog training questions at the end of the podcast. If you guys want me to answer your dog training questions and you're listening to this on an iTunes review or an iTunes podcast platform, all you have to do is head over to the iTunes review chart, leave a review and your question, and I'll answer it at the end of the podcast. If you're listening to this on Spotify, do me a solid favor. We do this absolutely for free. We're the number one dog training podcast in the country right now and growing in other countries, and it's amazing. Leave a review. Support the channel. We put a lot of work into this, and hopefully it's helping many of you out at home. We also just released our No Bad Dogs crew collaboration. My favorite local coffee company asked me to do a collab with them, and we're giving back to shelters across the United States who need funding. So we're raising money. It's a great cup of coffee, and we didn't just slap beans in a bag and branded it. We actually spent my wife and I spent a lot of time sniffing and doing the whole thing, you know, tasting and everything. So the link is in the description below. It's a great Christmas gift, and or it's a great gift just in general for yourselves. It's got a huge No Bad Dog branding on the front, so it's nice to have in the kitchen or in the studio or in your shop. So anyway, link is in the description. Support the No Bad Dog movement and enjoy the podcast. Talk to you at the end.
Sweet. Oh, here we go. Morning.
Good morning.
One is, she's 8 months old, so I understand this is adolescence as well, but lately, in the past 2 weeks, she's been jumping and biting at me, and I've tried turning around and walking away. She just bites my butt. I try to walk into her. She just keeps jumping. I've tried, you know, like at her and put my hand in her face and kind of invade her space, and that helps a little bit, but it's a little bit, I feel out of control with it. And the other thing is, we just moved to an open office concept temporarily, and so I don't know if that's part of it, but she's been demand barking a lot, which she didn't previously really used to do. And so I don't know if you want me to try and show you how she like lunges and bites at me.
No.
It's not all the time. Okay.
Yeah, it's fine. I have a pretty good idea of what that looks like. You said she's 8 months, right? How old is, or what's her name?
Her name's Junie.
Junie. So sweet. She's a doodle, yeah?
Poodle.
Poodle. Standard?
Yeah. Yes.
Cool. Cool. Hi. I just saw the fur and just, you know, I see so many doodles, I figured. Yeah.
No, I like the doodle look, but
yeah,
I wanted a poodle.
Yeah. So, all of the things that you're talking about is literally like the same type of stuff. So it kind of falls under the same why these things are happening. And so it's a mixture of things, but the way to move past it is going to be under one umbrella. But it's yes, it's puppyhood, yes, it's frustration and attention grabbing type of behaviors, and that's normal, you mm-hmm. know, for really any dog. My dog will even do it. Like if I'm sitting somewhere, she'll come up and put her head under my hand and say like, hey, let's go do something together. It's very normal. But there's a way to be like, hey, I'm busy or not right now, and be able to move past that. And that's something that you're not able to do likely. And that's also the cause of why she's doing it, is you're not able to say, hey, get away from me. This is too much. So it's this kind of this belt behavior, we'll call it a behavioral belt. And, that's what it comes down to, is your overall relationship is what causes this type of behavior. So mm-hmm. once it gets past, like you can look at it and say, oh yeah, she may be bored or she may want something, which that may be the truth. But once it's habitual and continual, then it just becomes very opportunistic, bratty behavior where she's like, mm-hmm. hey, this mm-hmm. is, hey, I want your attention. Hey, you're doing something. I also want to do this. So there's a whole process of how this works. But at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you have to teach her how to behave. And you have to teach her what you want her to do, because if not, she's just going to keep instinctually jumping on you for attention.
Okay. So how do I teach her that? Yeah. How do I teach her not to jump and bite me?
Yeah. Well, the first thing is I would just put a leash on her and start working on, because again, this is the reason why she's jumping is because your relationship, like dogs who do uh-huh. this are this kind of, I'm picking on you, antagonizing you. It's very brother sister type thing. It's not anything other than that. It's just this antagonistic, and she sees that in you. Like she sees like you'll get frustrated, you'll raise your voice, you'll say, hey, like, no, knock it off, don't. And she'll see that frustration, and then she'll even hit you harder, if you will. Mm-hmm. So that becomes an obvious frustrating problem for you as well, because she's basically getting a rise out of you as a dog owner. And that's, you got to be careful how that goes, because then she'll understand how to manipulate you and figure out, you know, how to push your buttons. So for me, it's really about kind of molding that relationship back down to what is appropriate and what's not. And that's really every dog owner's relationship. It's just some things are more serious than others. And so what I would do is, like, that's why if I, like, oftentimes when I used to do in-homes before I had a facility, I'd go to people's houses and I would do mm-hmm. just like this. I'd go into your home and I'd say, hey, what's going on? You'd say, hey, this is my dog and she jumps on me and whatever. And then I would say, oh, just grab your leash really quick. Because you have to be able to enforce certain things in order for mm-hmm. the dog to understand it. Like, you have to have that clear accountability. So when mm-hmm. a dog is jumping all over me, I don't have accountability. Like, I can push the dog mm-hmm. off, boom, she hits me again. I could say off, I could say no, I could scold her, I could yell at her in her face and point my finger at her, and she's going to be game on. She's going to come back for more. I could get treats out. She'll sit. As soon as the treats go away, boom, she's right back up again. So really what I like to do that's the most sustainable, especially for a dog at this age, at this puppy, kind of transferring over into adulthood. So the size of an adult dog, but, you know, kind of the mentality of a puppy, just using that leash to pop, mm-hmm. Just pop the collar off. You just tell the dog off. And so really quickly, dogs figure out what they can get away with and what they can't with certain people. So that's how I would start this.
She, I've tried, so like she'll do it sometimes when we're about to go on a walk. So she's on a leash. I use either your slip lead or a prong collar, but she doesn't respond to it. So I'll either step on the leash so she can't jump, or I'll pull it up to try and do a pop, but I think she's just so excited it doesn't register with her.
Yeah, it could be that, or your timing could be off, or your collar could be misplaced as well, because all of those things would account for this not working. So I would say that there's a mixture of things. The other thing that I think the bigger thing I should mention is just the simple, like, how you're doing it too. So if a dog comes up and jumps and you're pulling down, it's not going to be effective either. So you have to make sure that you're like popping and you're doing it really, like really clearly. So I think it's just timing for you. Like as soon as she comes up, like you can't wait for her to have her paws on your chest and like be sitting there. Like and then you pull her down and you can't wait for her to be like up in the air. Like you have to pop that collar down. So what you don't want to do is when she comes up, you don't want to like pull her down and say, "Hey, get down. Hey, get off. Come on." Like you really just want to be more assertive. Is the moment she comes up, you just pop that leash. So it's that pop that you're trying to get. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I don't think I've ever been able to get that pop right, even like when we're on walks and the jumping. And when you say jumping, do you mean the jumping and biting? Because I'm like bruised up from her biting, which I thought was over, but.
Yeah, it's all the same. So it's whatever. That's what I'm saying is like that type of behavior is the same behavior. It's picking, punking, like, hey, it's very antagonistic. I mean, that's what dogs do to one another. And so you just have to make sure that you're just at the end of the day, she's doing it because you're not doing anything about it that she cares about. So it's kind of like robbing the bank and what are you going to do about it type thing. And so you just have to be you have to be a little bit more assertive. And it doesn't take long to like get to that point. Like she's just but the thing is she will do this like
Leave
with
it.
so many things. Like she'll just it's not so much that she's jumping and she's biting. She just won't listen to you across the board because of your accountability. So anything that you say to her doesn't have enforcement behind it. There's no accountability behind it. There's no consequence behind it. It's I'm gonna do this, and you're like, oh, don't, and then I'm gonna do this. Okay, don't. It's like a toddler. Like I have nieces, and they're young, and so it's like, if you're like, hey, no, don't touch this. By the time you're already like pulling them away from this, they're already over here doing this, and you're just constantly putting out these fires. So you just have to make sure that when you say something out of your mouth, that it means something, and that's where you're overall. So it's not just the biting or the jumping. It's gonna be her going and getting a package and running around the room with it, or her grabbing
She's
some,
not really doing now.
yeah, exactly, grabbing something off the table and running away. She doesn't have anything in her head that when you say, "Hey, knock it off," or "Give me that," there's nothing in her head that goes, "Ooh, I don't want to get in trouble." It's only just you chasing her around and reacting to her behavior verbally or physically, but right now there's no consequence for any of this action. Therefore, why would she change?
Okay, so I hear that and so leave it. So say she's chewing on a package as she is now. What is the consequence for that?
Yeah.
Is
So realistically, it would be what you just did is kind of take it away, but that's not going to be
Okay.
sustainable. What it comes down to is you don't have the control to control her at all, period. So it doesn't matter what you throw at me. It's going to be, what if she package? What if she jumps? What if she pulls? What if she barks? What if she howls? What if she it does it, you can throw anything at me. It's because when you say, "Hey, Junie, no," she's like, "Yeah, okay, sure." Yep.
So the leash pop will be
just a
consequence.
Yeah, it could be. I think, you know, to me, it's not so much about, I mean, to get granular in your particular situation, I think the beginning idea would be, yes, the leash pop would be your correction. But I think just in general as a whole, I want you to understand that it's just the correction or the lack thereof. The correction is ultimately why she continues to push at you. There's no reason for her not to go and do stuff. And she's a puppy. She's going to get into stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing unusual about that. That's what makes dogs funny. But when you look at her and you say, hey, drop it or leave it, right now, your verbal cue to her to say, I want you to do this, whether it's drop or leave it or no, there's nothing in her head that clicks that says, I don't want to get in trouble. And that's what I'm talking about. So I would love for me to be able to just give you this secret, oh, when she's chewing on a package, you clap your hands and, you know, go get a lemon off the counter. There's just nothing. It's an overall, like, fundamental, basic foundation of everything that she does that you don't want her to do at this point, because she's a puppy. So she's going to get into the packages and she's going to jump and she's going to say, mom, and she's going to pick at you and she's going to grab your shirt. She's going to jump behind you and she's going to grab, she's going to do all this stuff because that's what puppies do. That's not abnormal. And we're not like, why is this happening? But the reason why it's going to continue to boil over and pop up in other places is because the underlying, like, hey, leave it. And she's not like getting down and going, oop, there's got to be like a little bit of fear of getting in trouble. And that right now doesn't exist. And to make it more generalized, just think about in society if we had no fear of getting into trouble. Like, we could do anything. We can smash windows and take whatever. I mean, in some cases that's happening in places. But you know what I mean? Like, you have to make sure that there's some sort of consequence. And it could be – so getting granular to you, it could be – sure, the leash popping, it could be – like what I would do with her right now is I would put the slip leash on. I would put it right behind her ears, and then I would be literally starting to immediately work on impulse control and accountability. Excuse me. And so what I would do is I would do two things. Is I would say, Junie, sit, and then – that's typically what, you know, dogs know. And then she may – because here's the thing is I want you to understand is – I'm going to play this out and I want you to look at the bigger picture here. So Junie, sit. Okay. And she may be looking at you like, sit now inside here on the what? Like, and she may be like, I don't, this is not, where's the treat? Why are we, you know? So at that moment, like, you asked her to do something and she may then be like, I'm not doing that. And then you would give her some sort of accountability. So you would hold the leash pressure up. She would go into a sit, or you would pop the leash and you'd go. She'd go into a sit. So at that moment is what I'm talking about. Is your so your relationship as an overall? If you ask her to do something that she knows that you've developed over time, and she's like, "I'm not doing that," and then you hold her accountable, but it's a mental game. So you hold her accountable. And then you hold her accountable for all these other things. Your relationship overall will start to change because she knows that there's some sort of consequence when you ask her or tell her to do something. And right now, at scale, think about the amount of times you've looked at her and said, don't do this, and she does it, and then you just go, I'm on a call, or I'm busy, or whatever. And that, for her, is like her overall relationship and that confidence of not – like, you're not going to do anything. That's like her mentality of like this playful thing. And so those are the things I would start to be doing is getting her out on a leash. I'd say, Junie, sit. She doesn't. Leash pressure. Correction immediately. Like, hey, I'm not saying this because I want to talk. I'm saying this because I want you to sit. And you start doing things like that. And then you get her kibble out with a bowl, right? So you put her kibble in a bowl and she's like, whoa, cool. And she may be jumping and then boom, off. Doop. She jumps, she boom, off, boom. And then she sits there patiently and she wiggles her butt and she's sitting. You take a piece of kibble out, you pay her, good, off. You pay her just, and you just teach her very clearly, like you would with a child, like, this is very good behavior. You're sitting here very politely, minding your own business. You're not screaming, like, this is great. We love this. More of this, please. And so you just work through the kinks of basic, what we call operant conditioning. It's basically just yes and no, teaching manners, right? So you have that kibble, and then you put the kibble bowl down, and she's – you good?
She's zooming across, sorry.
That's okay. I just saw your eyes go like this, so I didn't know.
Yeah, that's so, the dog.
So if you put that bowl down, like you take a food bowl and you put it down, and then she's likely, and again generalizing, she's gonna go, ooh, that, you know, food, perfect. It's down. This isn't dinner time, but whatever. And then you say leave it, and then you give her again. You just give her a leash pop, and you start working on that filter of. You can't just do whatever you want when you want. That's the best way to create anxiety and stress and anarchy and lack of boundaries, lack of respect. It's like the best way to have your dog be the most out of control as possible is to say, hey, do whatever you want. And, you know, life's just going to work itself out. I mean, this is an animal that you're trying to live with a human, and it doesn't work like that. So as soon as you start putting like, no, you can't have that until I release you, and you start putting these thresholds on. So she'll start looking at you a little differently, like, oh, like I can't just do whatever. And that's what's happening when she's getting stimulated in the morning, and she's like, you're up, the doing, 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 and she's doing all these things, and she's barking, and she's nipping you. And these are all things of why not? Like, why wouldn't you do this? It's like, as a dog owner, you're like, well, it's annoying and it hurts and I'm yelling at her. She doesn't care about that. Like dogs are animals. They do not care about any of that. And you can't just ignore it because you're going to get bruised up and all the stuff, you know? So, but again, I think at a bigger scale as just a dog owner, being in the professional world of this, it just creates a really unhealthy relationship because you guys are glorified roommates that love each other, but there's no respect. It's like you buy all the groceries. She comes in, eats the whole thing, looks at you like, sup, peace. Like, I'm going to go lay down now after I just ate all your groceries. Like, there's just no respect there. It's just, I do what I want when I want to do it. And so I just want you to understand that as a whole, that once you start cracking down on accountability – and consequences for actions, very clear. Like anything that she's doing right now has to have a little bit more repercussion because that's really your big, like you're not, again, like the reason why I'm being so confident about it is because everything that she's doing right now is not like, holy shit, really? Wow, 8-month-old, you know, poodle taking advantage of you. Interesting. It's just like... It's very normal. So I would just get back down to the basics of almost, I want to say like gatekeeping and, hey, this is here, but you can't have it until I release you. And that's going to be new for her because she's so used to just, and I want to take a step back because sometimes when I talk to clients, it's, well, no, I make her sit before we do X, Y, and Z. But what I want to point out is how many times do you have to tell the dog to sit before that actually is accomplished. And when the dog gets up and then goes for the food after you've said sit and stay, is she getting just pulled back or is she getting corrected for it? Because there's a big difference between the dog actually being corrected and just putting the dog right back where they came from. Because that's, again, I think a false security that a lot of dog owners have is when a dog, say you put a dog into a sit and a stay, you put a piece of food down to say, hey, we're going to work on impulse control and I'm going to start working on putting me first. And that's something that we just discussed. And she just, boom, gets out of her sit and lunges. And then you're like, you put her butt back down, you pull on the leash. No, sit. And then literally she's like, but there's food. Boom. And she gets up and we just do this for like X amount of time. And you have to understand that at scale, she's not actually listening to you. She's just politely waiting for this moment to just flee. And you should be able to, like, for impulse control, you should be able to put that food down, tell her to sit, and then she looks at you, she's licking her lips, she's excited, and then you just say, Junie, come. And you should be able to recall her away from the food yet again and have that control. And just that's just what you want to practice and with your dog is just that obedience of, I want you to listen to me. And then after, you know, after we That's what you're doing, is you're practicing your obedience and your manners and your communication with your dog, your impulse control, your thresholds, your gatekeeping, whatever you want to call it, because we still want her to be the funny Junie that we know and that we love, but when she does certain things instinctually because she's the dog, like maybe nips you because she gets excited or she jumps up and down, you need to be able to be like, hey, off. And she's like, oh, sorry, too much, too much. And you're like, yeah, too much. But that but that off actually matters. And right now, because of the lack of accountability, when you say stuff, it just goes in one ear and out the other.
Yeah. So then this is really helpful. Thank you. So should I keep the slip lead on her at all times in the house?
Okay. So in the beginning, possibly, especially if you have an availability to work from home or to work around her like you are now. If, you know, you were working with me, it would be like, yeah, because you can make yourself what we call a tab leash. So essentially it's just your it's your slip. Like if you were to take my slip leash, right, and you put it on her and you put it nice and snug, it's right behind your ears, and then you cut it, and then you like – say there's like a foot of string, you'd cut it and then you'd make like a little ball, and then it would just hang off her at like 4 inches.
Oh.
So that way, like if because again, I know that there's this when you're diving into this, okay, I'm going to start holding my dog accountable type of thing. Same thing with people. Like I'm going to hold myself accountable for a diet or whatever are I should get better at this as a lifestyle. It's going to be hard in the beginning, but that's what obedience is in general, is just having that self-control of like not eating 16 cookies and maybe eating one or none. You know, it's like, it's just how we live our lives too. Yeah, it's hard. Mm-hmm. But in the beginning, it's harder. But once you get into a groove and you mentally like, okay, this is how life is, like I can do this. And I think it's about confidence, telling yourself that you're going to do something and then following through is the best way to give yourself confidence as well. I've learned that over time with everything that I do. And when you're with her, when you tell her, leave it. Like if she were to be on the Amazon package there or whatever that was, you could just go over and say, you can grab the leash and say, leave it. And if she's like, you know, gets, you just pop it. Nope. And then you give her that correction and she stops. Good, leave it, and you take it away. But having that direct enforcement or accountability by having that honor is what you're going to do in the beginning. And I want to point out, too, that you know, there's so many different ways to be working with animals and to be working with dogs, but I specifically work with pet owners on things like this. And over the times of doing this, this is the best way to effectively, because my point is in the future, I don't want you to have any equipment on her. I want you to just say, Junie, off. She's like, okay. Junie, leave it. Okay. Junie, go to your bed, stay. Like right now, if you had a nice place, stay while you're on the phone or you're eating dinner or you're talking to a friend or whatever, you would just be able to live like a happier life. And that's what I think in general, what obedience is, and it's the same thing with students, coworkers, employees, kids. It's like, hey, we're going through the airport. I want you to hold my hand. Make sure we don't touch this. Make sure we, you know, all these things to make sure, like, and obedience isn't this like I'm in charge, I'm ruler, I'm king. It's I am an adult and I'm going to tell you how we're going to do this because that's what is in your best interest, you know? So I want to make sure that the narrative is clear that you're not trying to control everything she does, but right now the reason why she's picking on you is because your lack of accountability and your overall foundation. And so having that tab leash and having that 4-inch leash just kind of hang off, and that way when she jumps off, you can hold it and grab it quick. So,
okay, I like that. I'll make it. Do you sell your green slip lead online? Because I only bought one at your LA seminar.
We.
I like how lightweight it is.
We do. The answer is yes. I don't know if we have the green one. We have a smaller one that's a little bit smaller. It's the orange. It's like the orangish one. It has the orange tab. Okay. And I was just down there last night, and I know we have them. So they should be on the site. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah. Okay. So if you want to order like two of those, you could. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that. And then, so would you say then the demand barking falls under this thing, or am I giving in to her asking for attention?
Both. But that's what I mean, is one goes into the other.
Yeah. Okay.
Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's all in the same. It's all in the same thing.
Okay.
So you just have to, again, like, okay, so she comes up. So if I like to tell people, or I like to tell this to people, that like, her demand barking, she feels like that's appropriate to do. She feels like that's okay to do to you. Mm-hmm. Like, she's like, yeah, I can do this. Like, and I just, you know, over time, like, I get it that she wants attention. She wants something. But for her, like, there's a way and a time, right? So for her to come over and go, mom, 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 and just bark and bark and bark and bark. I mean, that is a, like, think about if a kid did that, right? It's just, mom, you're sitting there having a conversation with me. It's like, mom, 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 mom. There's no like, dude, I'm busy right now, or go to your bed, lay down. There's part of me that wants to tell you that as a professional, I want you to understand that if your dog is habitually like basically attention barking, pay attention to me, pay attention to me. Like, she thinks that that's appropriate for her to do. Same thing with like the jumping, and same thing with like jump, like nipping at any part of your body. A dog that has that no filter of I'm going to push as many boundaries as I can and I can do whatever I want with you is more of a, you need to zoom out a little bit and go like, wow, she thinks that that's okay to do to me. But it's, again, it's not so much like the demand barking or the nipping or this. It's all because, you know, that's your relationship. Mm-hmm. Is she's picking on you. That's like the best way I can tell you, is she's being antagonistic and she's picking on you, and she's, and I don't want her not to be a dog, but at the same time, it's like with kids, like we want kids to be joyous and fun and they bring light to our lives and it's great and it's like cool. But when they're acting out, we're not like, oh, they're just being kids. It's like, no, they're drinking bleach. Quit the shit. Correct them. Slap it out of their hand. Like, you know, and of course there's a lot of variables there, but it's really the same principles of just making sure that whatever they're doing, if you're like, hey, no, that's the bleach. And they're like, I don't listen to mom. And they just, you know what, that's the circumstances that you're dealing with, is your dog is like, I'm going to do this to you. And I'm going to do this to you. And I'm going to do this to you. And you're like, no. And they're like, tell me what to do. We don't have that relationship. Mm-hmm. So it is that, yes. You know, if she thinks it, if she thinks, I mean, there's a reason why she's doing it, you know? So.
Yeah. Okay. And then, so I get the overall envelope I need to work on. Uh-huh. At your LA seminar, I asked you this, but I'm still confused about walks, right? So I asked if you always walk your dog in a heel position. You said no, you let your dog kind of do its dog thing. Mm-hmm. But if I do that, I used to like switch between heel and brake and go sniff around. I think our relationship's not strong enough that she comes back to me and we go on a proper walk. So in our case, would you keep her in a heel or at least close by without distractions as much as possible, or let her sniff?
It is difficult because your dog has to go outside for a walk, but I think what I would be focusing on is like, so for an example, and I don't know if I said this at my seminar or not, but for an example, like what I always tell people is, like if I were to put my dog on a leash and go around my neighborhood right now, she would be in front of me unless I told her she couldn't be. If she's on a leash at all, because to be honest, in my neighborhood, I'll just let her off. But I have that control. So, you know, that's something that, you know, when you're asked, it's like every, you know, I just shouldn't say this, but like if all the adults in the room know how to drive a car, I'm like, oh, we're all getting into a car. The person that's driving is the person that's driving. That doesn't mean that like, oh, nobody else in the car knows how to drive. It's like, no, they are driving. Like that's their job right now. They are doing that. Mm-hmm. They have the wheel. That doesn't mean that nobody else can drive. And so when you're out with your dog, you want to have that like that switch on and off. You want to be able to say, Junie, heel. She's like, okay, boom, I know what that is. I'm right in position. I'm walking with you. I'm paying attention. I'm on a loose leash. And then you're like, Junie, break. Then she can be a dog. The problem that I think a lot of dog owners have is you don't have a long enough heel in a realistic environment, for an example, outside, to do much. So you're like, I can only really heel for 5 to 10 steps. And and that's something that like we deal with when we're training puppies or we're training new rescue dogs on stuff. And so you don't want to, again, you don't want to ask the dog to do something that they can't do. And it's not fair for you to enforce because they don't have the longevity of like, I've never swam that far. How do you expect, you know, it's like, that's kind of the thing. You have to make sure that they know how to do it. So you would almost peel back a little bit and work on your healing duration and your healing distance to build that out. And it's just like with human cardio, right? It's like, I've never ran in my life. So we're going to start with a half a mile. And then the next day we're going to do a little bit more. And the next day we're going to do a little bit more. So you're building that up. I wouldn't be able to say like, oh, you've never ran before. Let's go kick 5 miles. It's like, no, that's not going to happen. So you just have to build it out. So I think that that's where the confusion is happening, maybe with you and again, like a lot of other my clients, is they want to go on a half a mile walk, but their dog can only heel successfully for 10 steps. And that's normal. Mm-hmm. And that's totally okay for you to let your dog have the majority of the walk on a break. But what I would be doing is in the morning, fasting your dog, no breakfast, super food motivated, have a mixture of their kibble and treats in a pouch, and then go outside and start working on engagement and working on that distance and that distraction using your boundary system. So you're using your boundary system as a bumper system. Like that's how we teach dogs as a whole is, wrong. Yep, that's good. Wrong. Yep, that's good. And of course, because dogs don't understand English, we're using tools to help get our point across. And certain tools work better for certain people and for certain dogs. That's why we utilize them. So if and that's something I think a lot of people get caught up on, is it's not the tools that some people have a hard time with. It's some people actually have a hard time telling their dogs no. They think love and attention and affection is going to train their dogs, which is ludicrous, in my opinion. But so that's what I would be working on if I were you, is you have to you have to make you more valuable than the environment. And sometimes that's virtually impossible to do, but you have to be creative to figure out how you're going to do this. So what I like to do with my clients, it depends on where you live. You know, obviously, you know, some of my clients live in downtown Manhattan. Some of my clients live in the middle of Texas. So it just depends on what you have. But I typically just stake out like a tree or a mailbox or some sort of landmark. And you're like, all right, Junie, heel. And you're going to work on that heel until that landmark. And you're going to work on your leash pressure. And your leash pressure is like, nope, you pass that boundary. And that's where the pop comes in. So it's kind of like this alarm of like, but you're using food or some sort of engagement or some sort of motivation to keep the dog, you know, into that position. And then when you get to that landmark, you may, okay, break. And then you break the dog. Does that make sense?
Yes, totally. That's generally what I'm doing. We do need to work on the heel. I'll do it with no breakfast, like you suggested.
Yeah. And then also,
she's very food motivated.
Good. That's perfect. Yeah, that's perfect. Use that to your advantage. Say, hey, look, and then if, you know, if you want to really amp it up, get like some, I use Stewart's Pro Treat beef liver, because they come in like big blocks, like chunky blocks, and I can use one piece of food for like a good amount of time. And so anyway, so you could do like contact food luring, like you put her head is like right, like licking the treat out as you go. But the other thing that I would suggest is doing, which you saw at the seminar often, is like inside and outside turns. So just, getting the dog physically engaged with you as well, because, you know, there is a difference between physical engagement and mental engagement. But that's what I would do, is like, do your drawbacks, do your inside turns, do your outside turns, work on getting the dog. Like, you have to have fun with your dog. You have an 8-month-old dog, you know, walking around, I would assume the LA area with all this stuff going on. And you, like, you're walking around Disneyland and you're like, hey, look what I got. They're like, I don't give a shit about that. Look at this. There's Mickey Mouse. You know, there's a hobo over there in a Santa suit. You know, you have to say, hey, come. Yes. Good. Heel. Yes. Sit. Like, you have to really, especially at that age, because they're starting to mature into an adult, but at the same time, they're still, you know, puppyish. So again, like, I would suggest, don't try to go, like, if you're going to go 20 feet, you don't have to go forward 20 feet. You could turn every 5 feet to try to get that duration and just teach the dog that the heel is fundamentally you at my left side on a loose leash. It doesn't matter if I'm turning inside to you or outside of you or turning around and going the other way. When I say heel, you have to stay in this pocket. And I think that that also encourages dogs to not get so tunnel visioned, because when we heel a dog on a, like, for an example, on a sidewalk, you know, going straight, when we say heel and we're like, okay, we're going to get 20 steps in this heel. This is going to be great. This is going to be the longest one we've done. Dogs tend to get into this, like, they put their head down, they put their nose down, and it just makes it harder for you to gain things. That's why, again, like you see in that seminar that I did, I would just, if I'm with a dog that isn't paying attention to me at all, which a lot of times they're not, because, you know, when I get a dog for the first time, they don't know anything and they don't know me. So I'll walk forward and then I'll immediately draw back like a quarterback, and I'll just say, come, and then I'll draw back. And the dog typically won't recall with me because they're not used to following the human. They're used to doing whatever they want, which is why they're at my seminar. So I would just do that, like, quick little pop, and the dog kind of shakes their head and they're like, whoa. And then they come zipping back to me and I'm like, hey, yeah, like, I exist here. And look, oh, boom, food. Oh, wow. Who's this guy? And then we go into a heel and now they're looking at me and I draw back and now they're jumping towards me and they're excited. So you have to have that balance of engagement, because you're not just going to get an animal that's 8 months and go outside in a busy environment and say, like, hey, pay attention to me. They're like, chop liver, you know? The same thing with humans. Okay. Like, it takes a lot to, you know, break my attention from what I'm doing sometimes, but I don't know. That's what I would recommend, is don't be so in, like, a tunnel vision, because it's harder. Like, I would be changing directions. You go 1, 2, 3, boom, inside turn, take your left leg and cut them off. And then you would do some drawbacks, and then you would do some outside turns, and, just get really creative with, hey, pay attention to me. Like, I am the valuable thing out here. And you're going to have to work against reality, squirrels and chipmunks and birds and bicycles and other dogs. And it's going to be challenging in the beginning, because you're really not prepared for those things, because that's a higher level of obedience. And in those situations, instead of asking the dog to heel past a dog, when you just started teaching the heel under those circumstances or context, it's sometimes in your best interest to just say, okay, break, and then just take a couple pieces of food and throw it in the grass next to you, and the dog can scatter feed over there. So that way you're not, because dog owners get really frustrated. They're like, okay, we're not really good on heel yet. We don't know it yet. But hey, you know, I don't have a big place to practice this in, so we have to go outside, and there's a heavy distraction. So instead of trying to go past that other dog or go past that whatever, you can heel up to that point. And once you see the dog start getting really stimulating, you're like, it's not fair for me to ask this heel right now. This is way too much.
Yeah.
You just, you flash the dog some food, they go, ooh, and then you just kind of have kibble, and it's called scatter feeding. And you just kind of throw it on the ground. And then you have like 8 to 10 pieces of food on the ground, and the dog can sniff, and they're searching and their tail's wagging, and then boop, the dog's gone. And then you give them a break for the next 15 to 20 seconds or 30 seconds or whatever tickles your fancy. And then you say, hey, Junie, heel. And they're like, okay. So you're avoiding the situation, but it's going to be constructive avoidance, because the dog simply isn't set up for that. Now, in the future, if you have a trained dog and you're avoiding situations, that just means that your training's probably not as good as you think it is, and you need to do better. So,
yeah, for sure. Okay, that helps a lot, because that's a big problem for me too. Okay, this has been so great. I know you say all these things in your videos and seminars, but it's different. It's like one-on-one.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
The only other thing I would add to you, if you wanted, I don't know if you want to use the remaining time, but if you wanted to handle her, and so I can see how you're handling her with your slip leash, mm-hmm. I can give you some pointers if you'd like, just because we have a little bit of time. Because there's a lot of situations where, in theory, it's like, oh, that mm-hmm. makes sense. Like, oh, if your dog barks, just tell them no and they'll stop. Or, you know, it's the same exact thing when you're handling. It's just easier said than done. So if you want to just handle her a little bit, I can kind of walk you through things.
I don't think I have the pop down yet. And P.S., I have the your dog trail remote collar. I haven't, and I have your course. I just haven't started.
Yeah, that'll be helpful.
Okay. See, and she's like chewing on it. Okay, sit. Sit. Good, sit. Wait.
So there. Sit. See what I'm saying? Like, just for an just for an example, is when you said sit, like, and she got up, like, I wouldn't have put the leash back on. I would have, that's where that patience comes in. So you go sit, she puts her butt on the ground, you like literally move 2 inches to her and she's like, I'm up. So that right there is exactly what I'm talking about. That little thing where you're like, hey, Junie, I want you to put your butt on the ground. And then the moment you as a human just flinch, she's like, we're done. Those are things. So here's what I would do. So instead of asking her to sit because you know that she's not set up, we were just talking about this with the heel. She's not, she's not going to just sit there no matter what you do. You touch her on her chest, you touch her on her head, you touch her ears, and she's just sitting there because she's like, I know sit. I'm really good at obedience. I listen to mom perfect. She doesn't have that. So instead of setting her up for failure, I would just put the slip leash on. Then you can ask her to sit because at least if and when she gets up after that, you can hold her accountable.
Okay.
Yeah.
Stay.
So good stay instead of stay again.
Wait.
Ah. So pressure up back into a sit. There you go. Okay.
Good girl. Stay. Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, give her a little break.
Break.
Okay. So can you hear me okay?
Yep.
So like right there, you did three different things or two at least. So when you told her to sit and stay, don't like what you did is you said sit, you said stay. And when she was staying and sitting, like you told her to stay again. And that is very instinctual. You probably had no idea that you did it. But again, you want to create that clarity with her. So when you tell her to sit and you tell her to stay, and then you go and you put your leash on her and you're like, stay, she's like, I'm already, what's the deal? Like, this is confusing. Yeah. I'm already staying. So replace that stay with good stay. If you want to say something to reinforce it, like, hey, you're doing good, just say good stay. And then... Uh-huh. And then you threw in a weight, which is like, it was like completely left field there. So just make sure like when you're telling her or asking her to do stuff, like these are those little tiny things that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, hey, sit, stay. And she's like, okay. And you're like, stay. She's like, now I'm confused. That's where that frustration is going to come in. It's like, hey, pick up the pen. You pick up the pen. And I'm like, hey, pick up the pen. You're like, okay, well then what's the pen if this isn't it? And I'm like, oh, that is it. So just make sure like those little tiny things. So why don't you, I would try to keep the leash like a little bit. When she's doing this, you can just yank it out of her mouth and tell her no.
No.
Wait for her to grab it again. If she does, leave it. Yeah. Yeah. That's fine. Good. 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 No. Good. No.
Good.
Yeah.
No.
Boom. Good. See that?
Hey, girl.
You see how that works? So she's grabbing the leash because she's fresh. She's like, she's picking on you. She's like, hey, hey. And she's so used to getting this like stimulated rise out of you where you're like, you need to be more assertive. You need to be more, don't get, I don't, don't get like emotional about it, if that makes sense. Like,
yeah,
you know, with your tone of voice, you're like, don't get frustrated where you're like, leave it or no or don't. Like, that will then become like, she's like, ah, that's what she's looking. She's looking for that rise out of you. She's looking for that. I don't know how else to explain it, but that's just what it is. She's just picking. Yeah. So that was a perfect example of she grabs the leash, you go no, and you yanked it out. And then, So what I saw is she looked at you and then she's like, well, okay. And then she put her, and then she sat down. Mm-hmm. And then that's where you would be like, good no, or good leave it, however you want to mark that. But that was perfect. Yeah. But that's exactly what I'm talking about, is she was doing something and you made it uncomfortable by yanking it out of her mouth and you said no. Uh-huh. And then she sat down and she's like, okay. But if you were to do what you let her do before, where you're kind of like grabbing it and you're like, don't stop, or what, I don't know what you would do, but
yeah.
Just in general, again, like that's how dog owners, they're like, they're trying to emotionally like talk to the dog, but really it's your actions that matter, because dogs don't understand English. They don't, when you, right. Like you can't talk in sentences, and the dog's like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah. Like, oh, you're busy and you're late for a meeting and you gotta, like, there's all these complexities. So anyway,
yeah,
if you want to go through some other stuff, you can, but I mean, I'm just pointing out like very clearly, like very quick things there.
Nope. That makes sense. And I can take that, and apply it kind of all the way around.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
All right, you guys, you've reached the end of the podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully you found some insightful, valuable information as you were listening. Now I'm going to get into your three questions here. First one comes from Mary Powell, 5-star review. Hi, Tom. I recently adopted a 4-month-old Malinois Karma. She is 6-month-old now, and she's doing amazing with basic obedience. She knows lay down, place, heel, walking, heel, wait, no jumping, spin, weave through my legs, and come. She would do all these things 100% of the time in the house, with or without distractions. I am working on taking her into new environments to train these commands with small distractions, which she also is doing very well on. But we are having some behavioral issues that I'm not quite sure how to approach. I have listened to your podcast and watched a lot of your YouTube videos and understand that I need overall obedience 100% trained in order to really tackle these behavioral issues. But since these issues are happening at home, I'm wondering if there's anything I'm doing now to start helping with the situation. I live with 3 other people, my boyfriend, my brother, and his girlfriend. Karma is very comfortable with my boyfriend, but I am having issues with resource guarding me around my brother and his girlfriend. Anytime they walk into a room, they come down the stairs or move around where she can visibly see them, she goes absolutely bonkers, barks aggressively, and runs and lunges at them at the same time. She will not do this in the kennel, so I'm sure the issue has something to do with our relationship. When this behavior will stop happening, I've tried multiple things to stop it. I've tried furniture. I've tried further move her away, redirecting the sit command. I've tried my brother and his girlfriend treats to give to her. I've tried throwing the treats near or away from them. I've tried doing leash corrections with a little pop. I try my best to stay calm in situations like this, but find it hard sometimes to end up having to put her in the kennel to walk away, and it's frustrating. Okay, so basically the dog is reacting to 2 people that are living in the house, and it's only happening when she's next to the owner, which means the dog might be resource guarding the owner, because out of the context of the dog being away from the owner, the dog doesn't bark at the same people. So people walk down the stairs, the dog is standing next to the owner, the dog barks. The same people walk down the stairs, the dog is on the other side of the room in a kennel, doesn't bark at all. So could be resource guarding, could be confidence with you, could be a mixture of things. You know, it sounds like you're doing everything right. So I would say that if on paper, air quotes, you're doing everything right, there's a good chance that just the way that you're doing it is not. So if you're facilitating all the things that you need, which means maybe you have all the tools to build the house, but you're not swinging the hammer right, then you're certainly not going to drive the nail. So, you know, I know that this is a frustrating answer for you, but the reality is there's a very, 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 very high likelihood, that you're just not doing anything right. When you're correcting the dog, there's so many variables that go into it. I mean, look at all of the videos I have of people saying, oh, I correct. And then I'm like, nope, that's, that, that didn't work. So it could be everything from the leash positioning, what you're using for a leash, what collar you're using, where the collar's placed, what size of the collar is, where the dog is in position to where you are, what how long your leash is, how tight the leash is when you correct, what you're saying, how you're doing it. There's so many variables that go into if you're trying to correct your dog and your dog simply isn't snapping out of it, there's just a really great chance you're not doing it right. Now, there is some variances there to some degree with certain dogs. The next couple of videos that we have filmed and queued up are definitely going to be able to showcase that because there's just certain dogs who you have to get really creative with to figure out how to let them know what they're doing is wrong. So I would just say like a couple of pointers is set this up in a scenario where you are downstairs with Karma. Your whatever collar you're using is nice and snug right behind her ears. You're nice and relaxed. They come down. She starts to react. You guys are standing up. You immediately correct her and tell her to leave it. Oftentimes what people do is they sit down on the couch. They put the dog in front of them. The collar is sliding down their neck. The collar is already tight. We're going, leave it, leave it, leave it. We're doing all the wrong things. So again, that's like the hard thing with what I do is I think that the majority of you guys listening or people who watch my videos understand like, okay, these are some things that I'll need to get the job done. But there's also a lot of handling and technique and skill set and experience to some degree that's going to have to go in to some dogs. Some dogs are going to be a little bit easier. Some people are like, hey, man, I mean, just look at the reviews in the podcast and in the comments in the YouTube page. It's like, hey, man, you know, my dog was pulling. I invested into a prong collar and it changed my whole life. Thank you so much. Boom. You know, or there's situations where the dog isn't that easy to train and that may be what you're dealing with. So, I would love to see what's going on. If you want to book a consultation with me and send me over some footage, I'd be able to point out all the things that you may be doing wrong and also give you some advice on how to get better. Just like you guys listened into this podcast about very basic things. I mean, again, this is a podcast where I literally was talking to somebody for an entire hour on how to train and it's like, okay, got it. And then the immediate first 30 seconds she got her dog out, she made three critical mistakes, even though we just talked about everything. So, and that's not to her fault. It's just, there's a lot of granular situations that you also have to be aware of that may be happening. So in your head, I understand like, oh, I'm doing everything right, blah, blah, blah. I'm doing everything. I've tried everything. But at the same time, like if you're trying things and you're still not getting results, it's just because you haven't found the piece that you're missing. And that's really what it comes down to. It's like that with anything in life, with success and business or anything. It's like you're trying to make it work, it's not happening. We could kind of sit back and be like, oh, woe is me, I tried everything, nothing works, this, you know, is frustrating. Or you can say like, hey, I must not be doing something right. So to me, it sounds like you're on paper doing everything right, but you're really likely not if you're doing all those things. So I'd love to, unfortunately, I'd have to see what's going on. So it's a good question. Hope that helps. Next one, J. Ray, 1996. Five-star review, very informative. I love this podcast. I follow him on TikTok and Instagram. I have a very reactive dog, and this helps put things into perspective how to train better. My question for Tom would be, my dog is 2 years old. He's a heeler mix and used to bring him everywhere with me, but I can't remember when it got to this point, but he gets very nervous riding in the truck, and it seems I've tried to put him in a crate, and it got worse. He squeaks, as I call it, or he paces back and forth. I've tried using an e-collar to use the pager on him. I would have treats handy for when he is calmer to reward him, but as we get back home, he's calm and seems to do better on the highway. What more can I be doing? You know, there's a couple different things. First of all, I think the pager is probably going to be a little too much. The pager for me, and if you listen to anything that I do, I haven't really talked about the pager in any other way other than using it as an intervention. Like if your dog is doing something dangerous to them or the people around them, aka trying to bite people, being aggressive, reactive, etc., that's when the pager comes in. So using it for your dog getting anxious driving in a vehicle, I wouldn't be doing, just because I think that'll make it worse. So there's that. So with Lakota, like for an example, I don't crate her every single time I put her into my truck. Sometimes she's up front, you know, if I'm going to the store, whatever the case may be, you know, juggling around a car seat and whatever. She's not always in the crate. So, which I know isn't always the safest, but obviously we try to put her in a crate. you know, when we can remember, when it's just applicable. So anyway, so for us, it's like when I get her, like when I get on the road, she'll be a little anxious and she'll kind of spin and she'll be a little anxious until I get on the highway, because she knows that there's like turns and she's like kind of sloshing around a little bit, which is why we suggest crating dogs. But so there's that. It's just like sometimes when you're going through town, the dog can get a little bit more anxious because once you get on the highway, you're going straight and you're not turning. So that's why dogs, like when they get on the highway, like you said, they kind of page, they settle down and lay down. But also too, there's a maturity thing. Like you said, like all of a sudden your dog started doing this. So could have been a maturity thing. Dogs change just like humans do. So, hey, why is my 10-year-old kid not interested in Barney anymore? It's like, well, because they're not a kid anymore. So it's the same interest of like, some dogs will hop in, pass out, and then as they get older, it may change. They may get bigger, they may see things differently, they may feel things differently, they may hear things differently. So I guess you have to really figure out, like for me, this would not be, like I know you're trying to fix it or you're trying to not have it happen because it wasn't happening before. But for me, I would not think twice about this. I put the dog in the truck, and as I'm riding, and they're like kind of nervous. We get the highway, boom, they lay down. That's it. I wouldn't be going too crazy on this. I wouldn't be correcting it, because dogs are just very, you know, they're gonna tell you how they feel. And there's certain situations, like if I have a dog that's trying to kill somebody, I'm gonna intervene and be like, that you can't ever feel like that. That's gonna get you killed. But when you have a dog that's anxious or nervous and they're like, hey, I'm not comfortable. Okay, now I'm good. Like, you're just gonna have to wait for that comfortability to set in. Again, like obviously the crate is the safest thing. If you're worried about safety, I would just like, you know, hey, this is your crate. There's your mat. Get in there and that's it. But again, it's like pleasure over pain type thing. Then the enjoyment of bringing your dog anywhere is now not an enjoyment for either of you, because she's crying and panting and spinning and barking, and then she's nervous. So the whole thing sucks. So you just have to like work out what's important to you. And then, like I said, at the end of the day, for me personally, if I got into the truck and my dog paced around a little bit until I got on the highway, I would just ride that out until you get there. Or just, you know, hey, maybe I'm not going to the highway. I'm just going to go run some errands. Maybe your dog just would rather stay home. So you just got to read the room a little bit. Good question, though. Alrighty, next one is Margaret and Matt. 5-star review, A+ content. I'm learning so much. Thank you so much. My wife and I just brought home a rescue mix breed, like a Southern style healer mix. She's 7 months old and lovely at meeting new people and super, super trainable. We thought we were off to a good start when she suddenly lunged and nipped our three-year-old's few days in. We sent her to a board and train while she took a breather to decide what to do next. I lucked out. The board and train follows your methods pretty much to the core, with accountability, slip collar, and praise, boundaries. So while she was there for 2 weeks being evaluated and trained, I devoured your content. She came home, and we are now trying to take things slower to give her a fair chance of success. We decided that she would first be crated in the main living room for the first week whenever our toddler was free, but she could not observe him. It sound rough, but it really only was about 3 hours a day, but a little bit more on the weekends. She gets training and lets out 4 to 5 times a day, 40 minutes of heel walking, and I'm just drilling her with place, so drilling her with obedience. Just gosh darn it, listen to me so I don't have to ship you off again. That's what he's saying to the dog. So she hasn't had a day when she hasn't growled. She hasn't had a day when she hasn't growled after locking eyes with him during the first week home. They can interact briefly without incident outside the house, but again, I'm guarding her from failure and making a brief with strict rules. This is really getting long, and honestly, I just wish I could have got an hour to talk, but for now, what do you think the next step is for integration? I feel like to work through this with this correction, I have to put my toddler at risk, which is so hard, and correction never feels like one and done solution unless rattlesnakes at Cody's Ranch, apparently. Congrats on your little one. I wish you the best of luck. Reading stories like So you have a dog that you adopted, 7 months old, you get home, you also have a three-year-old toddler, she lunged and nipped our three-year-old within a few days. So a couple things is, I recently had been asked to put together a video for Albany Med, which is Albany's the capital of New York, and that's a big hospital, and they had asked me to put together a bite prevention video for, I'm assuming, new parents or parents in general, because they have had like 8 bites this last week just alone, and it just keeps piling up. So I've been thinking about how I'm going to do this and some advice I would give. And, you know, I think we went over this in the podcast recently on the video. I haven't released it yet with my staff, but I'm going to be obviously honest, because that's one thing that's going to help you, but also get straight to the point. Is there's a really great chance your dog doesn't like kids, and that's never going to change. Great chance, huge chance. So you have to then decide how you want to live your life. And for me, it would be not an easy decision, but it would be like, even with Lakota, my dog now, I trust her with people. I trust her with my son. But as my son gets older, I'm going to be constantly watching what happens and watching her language and watching what he does. And so I don't know the context of the nip or the bite, but under any circumstances, as a human being and as a professional trainer, having an expertise in behavior, I wouldn't let any toddler go up to a dog that you weren't 100% on. And even if you were, like, even with me, like, I'm 100% on Lakota, but Lakota's also never had a toddler going up and trying to take food out of her bowl, or crawling up to her crate while she's eating, or crawling up to her while she's laying on her bed, or going up to her and trying to pet her while she's drinking water, or try to go take a bone from her. So understanding that I am also going through these things as I have a newborn son, or he's going to be 6 months this week, I think. So maybe not newborn anymore, but a young feller. And as he develops and crawls and walks and things, I am not going to let him do certain things. And I don't care how well trained my dog is. I don't care how much I trust my dog. There's just things I wouldn't, what's the point? It's like, oh, that's a bowl. You're not going near there. Oh, the dog's eating in the other room because, you know, you're a kid. So under the circumstances, like, there's so many preventable bites that happen. I would say, I don't want to give a percentage because I'm not in that field, but I am understanding that the majority of bites out there are so freaking preventable. It's disheartening because a lot of dogs, unfortunately, get put down. A lot of dogs get into the shelter. A lot of dogs go, you know, whatever. It's just kind of shitty. So I would just say, like, you know, as you're developing and as you're working, and you're kind of working through these kinks, obviously your obedience is going to be enormously important. So just making sure that as you have your child and as you have your toddler and you're working around certain things, like, it's important for you to be able to have that control. So your toddler's walking around, crawling around, whatever your toddler's doing, and you need to have the control. But at the same time, like, healers just aren't great. Healers are more prone to having more incidences with kids, I would say, strictly because of their genetics and their wiring. Like, they want to herd, they want to chase, they want to nip, they want to move things around, and they may not be suitable for kids, or they may not be good with kids. And that's hard. It's not your guys' fault, because, you know, even from a shelter or foster's point of view, you know, if you have a dog that's great with people, they don't also have a bunch of kids running around as bait either. You know, they're not going to say, like, oh yeah, we have 3 and 4 year olds running around all the time, and this one's good and this one isn't. That's not fair to anybody. So it's difficult, because they're going to say, yeah, it's great with people, and they are. But your job is to understand and not to be naive, to be like, well, this is also a dog that's never potentially been around kids. And so you just have to double down the hatches and really put in the work to manage these situations in order for it to be successful. So I just don't think, again, like, this is literally like me answering a comment on Instagram, which obviously you guys, you know, are writing longer questions and obviously more devoted to learning more things instead of, you know, commenting, I should say. So anyway, so my point is there's not a lot of context. There's not a lot of back and forth. There's not a lot of information. There's not a lot of I don't knows, you know. So, but this dog is young enough to probably never been around kids. Also looking at the bite, I don't know what it was. I don't know how severe it was, but understanding that a dog's first response when they're nervous is likely to run. And if they don't run, or if they're not the type of dog to run, is to nip to try to correct the thing away from them, which happened. And so, you know, dogs are so powerful, they can break bones on instant. The fact that that didn't happen, it doesn't sound like, you know, it was a decision by the dog too. So I think just advocating both for your child and for your dog is the best thing to do. And to be honest, like, unless I have more context of the situation, or even not, like, you have a couple options. The one option is you manage the way you are. Dog is away from the child until the child gets older, and maybe the dog gets a little bit better because they realize, oh, you're like, when we brought Banks home, my son, Lakota didn't know it was a person. She was so confused. She was terrified of this thing until he maybe, I don't know, started smelling more like a human or sounding or looking like a human or whatever it was. I don't know. But my point is sometimes as humans get older, they're like, oh, you're a human, I'm okay with you. So, but until then, like, you have to manage the situation and make sure that they're not put into situations that's going to fail them. And that's not an abnormal living situation for families. It's inconvenient, but it's not abnormal. And it's responsible and okay for you to do, because you're going to say, hey, we have a dog that, and I don't know how Lakota is going to react as soon as my son starts to crawl and walk and whatever. And we plan on getting another dog, possibly next year as well. So, you know, there's all these different variables, but those are your options. Is you manage the situation to say, like, hey, dog's not going to be around toddler, and if we're coexisting in the same space, the obedience on the dog is great, the control on the dog is better. And so, like, if you're hanging out on the couch and the dog is, like, free roaming, that's probably fine if you're just hanging out with the kid, because I don't think this dog wants to, like, go up and attack this kid. I just think if the kid walks up to the dog or makes a fast move towards the dog, there's a problem. So I think you just have to, like, spend some time figuring out what it is, because if your dog can coexist with this child with zero incidences and zero problems, as long as the kid isn't walking up or touching the dog, that's normal. I think that that's fair. It's like, then you're fine. Then you just say, like, hey, this is how we're going to live. Or you get rid of the dog. That's it, you know? So but again, like, there's so many variables that go into that. That I would have to, like, see and hear, you know, just to give you more context. I'm not saying that, but I just think as a scale, like, I don't think this dog is going to end up liking this kid until this kid start acting and looking more like a more young adult. And the dog's young enough to where that could happen. You could see that evolution and that maturity, but yeah. So anyway, good questions, guys. Thank you so much for listening. Don't forget to ask your dog training questions and I'll answer them next week. All right. If I don't talk, let's see. This is going to come out today, Wednesday. So yeah, Monday. We'll talk to you guys Mondays. But have a merry, 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 merry Christmas. Be safe. Do not put your dogs into situations, please. There's so many dog bites on Christmas because people just get carried away with, like, and it is. It's a magical day. It's a special day. It's a beautiful tradition that families spread and celebrate all over the world, and Hanukkah and all the other holidays that are around this time. And everyone is moving and grooving and just kind of being naive to, like, oh, this is great. It's Christmas morning. Everybody loves each other. The dog doesn't give a shit. Remember that. The dogs don't care about holidays. They don't care about the bows and the stockings and the cinnamon buns and the fireplaces. They will bite somebody because you turned your back and you thought, oh, it's Christmas, this won't happen. They don't care. They don't know. Remember that. All right, you guys, I'll talk to you next week. Be safe. Bye.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.